and ashamed. Ram was sweeping the world below with the little telescope, Derek aiming his camera at the mine pit, which had shrunk to a dark little dimple. "The cable took a lot of metal, if it's any kind of metal," he was saying. "I imagine most of it came from there." The trilithons were already too small to see, the floor under them a tiny white dot. I thought I could trace the road, a thin, dark line running straight toward the misty horizon in what must be the west. I found clouds, bright little puffs of cotton already far below. The sky had darkened, fading into purple. "Chakula!" Ram sniffed and came to his feet. "Food!" I caught a scent like the fragrance of baking bread. We followed him into an inner room. Tables and chairs were spaced around a thick cylinder that I thought must be a shield for the cable. We sat at a table. The robot attendant came to stand over us, speaking again in that quick, sharp voice. "It wants our orders." Derek pointed at hieroglyphs on the tabletop. "The menu, maybe?" He set his forefinger on a line of script. The robot clucked and fixed those crystal eyes on Ram. He made a stab at the symbols. So did I. The robot glided away, came back with a glass of water for him, a slice of a ripe papaya for Ram, a cup of very good coffee for me. We tried and tried again. It brought me a bowl of something so bitter I spit it out, and then a basket of some strange green fruit, but we kept on till Ram hit the code for a platter of steak and scrambled eggs. "Likely synthetics." Derek shrugged and speared another slice of meat. "Not that I care." We ate half a dozen platters clean. When Derek got up to look for a bathroom, the robot did more than show him the way. He came back looking like another man, his weeks of stubble shaved, his sandy hair neatly cut, wearing a trim jacket of something like silk with two intersecting circles woven into the breast. Ram and I followed him. The sunward windows had been darkened when we returned to our seats. I felt that we were floating in a gulf of darkness above and below and all around us until my eyes adjusted and stars blazed out. They were the same constellations we had seen every night on the moving road, but turned strange with a million more stars, a universe of diamond dust and inky blackness more splendid than I had ever imagined. I don't know how many hours we spent in space. Even Derek was too busy to watch the time. He swept the stars with his tiny telescope and longed for a lens with greater power. He scanned the powdered fire of the Milky Way, trying to guess where we were in the galaxy. When Ram wanted to know the direction of Earth, he could only shake his head. The gong rang again. The attendant came to stand beside us. Seat restraints folded around us. Suddenly, we were falling into that blazing infinity. Vertigo put my heart in my throat. The cosmos tipped and swung around us. I shut my eyes and clutched at my seat until our weight came back. Secure again, I swallowed hard and caught a long breath. "Midpoint of the trip," Derek said. "Halfway to our destination. It's below us now, no longer up." Still famished from our long, hungry march, we returned to the inside room and devoured another banquet. When I dozed, the attendant came silently to recline my seat and spread a blanket over me. Ram and Derek woke me with their excited voices. "Pangea!" We were coming down to the sister planet. Its globe was already vast, half ocean blue, half shaded with greens and browns and grays. Derek was scanning it with his little telescope. "Earth could have looked like that a million years ago." He gave Ram the telescope while he shot a photo, and then he took it back to study the world below. "A city," he pointed through the glass-like floor. "Green parks around it. No bomb craters or signs of devastation I can make out. All we've seen is death, but perhaps this world won the war."
"Or is it my little mama's hell?"
Frowning uneasily, Ram touched an absent finger to the crown of worlds on his forehead.
"My father never believed her. But when she was down with the fever, she raved about the metal devils snatching her away from her people."
"Maybe they're here."
Thoughtfully, Derek fingered his freshly shaven jaw.
"She couldn't have come from anywhere we've been."
The other planet, now overhead, had dwindled to a narrow sickle, still so bright it dimmed the stars around it. Derek tipped his camera for a final shot and took the telescope to scan the city again.
"It lies along an ocean coast," he said. There's a wooded mountain range behind it. It's maybe 20 miles long up and down along the coast. It's only 3 or 4 miles wide between the beach and the hills. I see a lot of trees along the streets. Nothing like a shanty town. It looks alive. Guessing from the location, the climate should be fine. Looks like a pleasant place to live. Ram took the telescope to sweep it again. I don't know. He made an uneasy grimace. It looks too empty. No vehicles moving on the streets. No ships off the beach. I'm afraid it's dead. The black sky turned purple, finally blue. A white dot at the bottom of the cable swelled wider. Slowing, the sky car gave us time to survey the city. Wide avenues ran the length of it parallel to the sea. Cross streets ran down to a wide white beach that looked like coral sand. In the hills to the west, I saw a dam and a canyon, a long blue lake behind it, and snow-crowned mountain peaks in the distance. The top of a tall black butte behind the city had been carved into two colossal nude figures, a man and a woman, seated on a throne. You should have connections here. With an ironic grin at the crown of worlds, Derek handed Ram the telescope. If this really is your little mama's heaven, you ought to have kinfolk here. Your birthmark may be your tag for some noble destiny.
Destiny, Ram snorted. All the destiny I want is a ticket back home.
I leaned to look down the cable. A white dot at its foot swelled faster. The city streets rushed away. I was falling with nothing under me. A sudden sweat chilled me. I gripped the arms of the seat and shut my eyes till I heard Derek's voice and knew we were down.
Seven gates, he spoke to Ram. Gates maybe to the seven worlds and the dead empire, if that's what the dots on your key stand for.
Oh, maybe not. Ram shrugged and peered around us. We were safely down on the white landing pad. A black shadow fell across the sky car, cast by an immense square column that hid the sun. The great circle inside the trilithons was empty of anything. Nothing stirred anywhere. The door slid open. The robot stood beside it, silently bowing. We picked up our packs and shuffled out. Three little piles of bright metal crystal lay before us on the floor. Lazily, they stirred as we stepped down. They formed three thick coils that lifted and morphed. In a moment, they were three weird caricatures. A fantastic mockery of Ram, a tiny white crystal flashing on his forehead. Derek, with a two-fingered hand holding something like his telescope, craning to scan the cable. A smaller figure, stooped under a bulging backpack. That had to be me. They bowed, quacked at us, and stood motionless.
I bet they're waiting for orders, Derek said, if we knew the language.
We didn't. After half a minute, they bowed again and sank back into three glittering serpents. A hole yawned open in the floor beyond them. They crawled into it, and it shut behind them. We were left standing there on the vacant floor at the foot of the cable, the tall, black trilithons towering around us. Even with Ram and Derek beside me, I felt terribly alone.
Chapter 11
The sky car left us at the foot of the cable. We watched it climb, shrink to a black insect, disappear. A seagull soared past the cable, but I heard no human sound, saw no human movement.
If this is anybody's heaven, Ram muttered, not many got here.
Empty or not, it's something new to see. Derek frowned at Ram's birthmark. Your little mama came from somewhere. She must have left people alive. We've a chance to find them here.
If we knew which way to go, Ram shrugged uneasily. Or what we'll meet on the way.
We stood peering uncertainly around us. The great black trilithons stood far apart. Through the gaps between them I saw wide avenues walled with a magnificent architecture. Stately buildings several stories high, most of them stone. Slender minarets, a golden dome, a towering white obelisk, a magnificent arch. I looked up the cable after the sky car, already wistful for the meals and the bath, wondering if we should have stayed aboard. Derek hitched his backpack higher and nodded toward the morning sun.
The ocean's that way. Let's see the city.
We walked around the trilithon to the broad avenue. Derek stopped to shake his head at the pavement. Colors striped like the road we had ridden, it was flowing in two directions, with a stationary strip between. We stopped at the curb, looking up and down it. As far as we could see, nobody was on it. I tried to picture the city as it must have been. People riding the pavement, bustling about their business, living in the homes. Who had they been? What had they cared for or feared, worshipped or believed? What had they done for a living? My imagination failed. This world was too strange. Ram had turned uneasily to Derek. Were they human?
They must have been. Derek frowned and nodded. The people we saw in the virtual world looked as human as we are. The skulls on the battlefield were human. Your little mama's people were Homo sapiens or you wouldn't be here.
I don't get it. Ram blinked at the empty avenue. Machines are still running. I don't see any damage from the war. What became of everybody?
Yeah, the big question.
Derek shrugged.
We're looking for the answer.
Ram gripped his spear and led us on. We got on the moving pavement. Two blocks down, it divided to flow around an island that held a colossal monument. Nude figures of a black man and a white woman sat side by side on a golden throne, holding hands and smiling at each other. Both foreheads wore the crown of worlds.
That's you. Derek gave Ram a quizzical grin. You've come home?
Ram stared again at the black giant. Something pinched his face. He caught his breath as if to speak, but only grunted and looked ahead. Farther on, we stepped off the pavement to stare at a white marble temple. It was another Acropolis. On a somewhat larger scale, the white columns perfect, the architrave and roof intact.
Are we crazy?
Ram shook his head at Derek. Did the old empire reach to Greece? Derek found his pocket telescope to scan it.
Lupe wondered about the builders of the Sahara Trilithon, he said. About other evidences of their presence on Earth? She'd be itching to research her monograph about possible cultural influences, if she was still with us.
He frowned at the temple again.
It looks nearly identical, but architrave's different. Instead of the Greek mythology, the images could tell a very different story if we knew how to read it.
He grinned at Ram.
There's your holy family at the center with your crown of worlds above them. And look at that! His voice lifted. A rocket ship in flight! A hint at their lost history. It must be amazing if we only knew it. The builders had to be here before they installed the trilithons. They were exploring space, planting life on dead planets, building magnificent cities until something went terribly wrong. I'd like to know...
Ram jogged, his elbow pointing at the avenue behind us. I saw a figure gliding toward us fast. When it was close enough, I saw that it was another multicellular robot pushing a cart loaded with broken tree branches and scraps of junk, a dead seagull on top of the pile.
That's why! He nodded and lifted his camera. That's the reason we find those skeletons, no trace of what became of the people, the robots... They're still on duty. They keep the city clean. Whatever happened, they've removed the evidence.
We wandered on into what must have been a business center. There were no skyscrapers, but massive facades rose several stories tall. They looked oddly half-familiar. Polished granite, shining metal, spotless glass. They might almost have stood in New York or Hong Kong. Wide show windows fascinated us. Handsome brown-skinned models were nude enough to appear convincingly human. They offered gems that looked precious, garments and styles that might have looked merely exotic at home, artifacts that Lupe would have been hard put to explain. Ram tried the doors, but they were locked. He tried his emerald pendant. Nothing opened. Derek shot photos, and we walked on to a black-pillared trilithon that loomed above the roofs ahead. It towered at the center of a wide, green park, the grass around it neatly mowed. A moving pathway carried us toward banks of seats that rose on either side of it. The seats were empty, the floor around the pillars bare.
I saw no movement till Ram pointed at a line of huge green hieroglyphs crawling across the great black lintel stone.
"What do you think?" He looked at Derek. "Was it another gate? Some kind of theater?"
"Or a temple?" Derek shrugged and grinned. "They must have gathered here. Could be to worship your ancestral gods."
Ram winced from his ironic tone but said nothing.
"Tired?"
Derek looked at me.
"Let's sit down and decide what to do."
"Okay." I felt grateful. "We've walked too far." We went on to seats that faced the vacant floor between the vast black columns. The moment we sat, the silence was broken. Strange chords pealed from nowhere and slowly died away. The columns and the seats beyond them flickered and vanished. On the front row, we were perched on the brink of a black and empty void. Too close. My stomach heaved. Giddy, I caught Ram's arm. He was frozen, watching bright golden hieroglyphs swimming through the darkness. They faded. Stars came out, but not the alien stars we had seen from the sky car.
"Orion!"
I heard Derek gasp.
"There's Rigel! Betelgeuse! Bellatrix! Our own stars! That's back close to home, in our own galactic neighborhood!"
The stars swam apart to leave a single, faint fleck alone in the void. It grew brighter, brighter, brighter until it was nearly blinding. It vanished, leaving a dim white point where it had been, that swelled into a bright blue globe patched with spiral storms. Suddenly, it was Earth. So near, my stomach knotted with a sense that we were falling toward it. I saw the blue Mediterranean, North Africa below it, the Sahara more green than brown. We came down beside the twin pillars of a lone trilithon. This should have been the great Erg, but I saw no sand. Beyond the columns instead lay a landscape of grassy meadow and distant trees. Warthogs stood in a waterhole near us. Impalas and zebras grazed toward it. Two tall multicellular robots came lumbering from it toward us, carrying something in a cage. They vanished before I could see what was in the cage. Strange music rose and fell. Strange voices chirped and trilled. Glowing hieroglyphs raced through a dim blue haze that faded into blackness. And when sunlight returned, the landscape had changed. Sand lay piled high around the trilithon, and the lintel stone had fallen. I found our little tent in the hollow in the dune where the waterhole had been. Lupe Vargas, in her wide-brimmed field hat, was on her knees in the dig, cataloging her collection of bones. His trousers down, Ram squatted beyond the ridge. "Ungalia!" Beside me on the seat, he yelled and pointed. The sand around those buried columns had exploded. That gigantic hopper burst out of it and stood up on its long metal legs and peered across the dunes. A strange thing, its slender body green and yellow, its great head silver bright. It was half alive and half machine, monstrous and somehow magnificent. It found our tent with Loopy beside it, crouched flat, and sprang into the air. The scene flickered, and we were seeing through the hopper's eyes as it soared high and glided down on Lupe. We saw her look up, shock and terror on her face. We saw the hopper's arms reaching for her, saw its long black claws snatch her up, saw Ram pull up his pants, wave his arms, and run back over the ridge. The hopper jumped. Ram in the tent fell away. Lupe's struggling body jerked and sagged as the claws drew her close. The dune below her swelled and shrank as the hopper rose and glided, swelled and shrank again. Once more that alien music rolled. Alien voices squealed. The desert faded into darkness, glowing hieroglyphs flying through it. When light came back, we were looking into a tiny white-walled cell with close-spaced bars across the front. A folded blanket and an empty dish lay on a shelf along one wall. The toilet was a hole in the floor. Lupe lay on the floor, naked, doing push-ups. Her hair was wild, her face gaunt and thin, but set in grim determination. Abruptly, she looked toward the door.
Huh?
Beside me, Derek gasped and pointed. The barred door was sliding open. A thick snake of bright, geometric bits slithered inside. It split into glittering piles. On her feet, fists clenched, she watched them grow into two multicellular robots. I saw her lips moving, but heard no sound.
"Damn," Ram whispered. "No way we can help her."
They stalked toward her, reaching for her with gleaming two-fingered hands, their crystal eyes blazing red. She flickered before they touched her, and then they all shimmered and vanished into that sickening pit of blackness. Before I had time to grab for the seat, reality had returned. We sat staring through the empty gateway at the empty avenue beyond.
"So she's alive!" Ram mopped at sweat on his face. "I don't know where."
"Your little mama!" Derek gave him a startled glance. "Those robots! They're her metal devils! That cage is the white box where she said they tortured her."
Chapter 12
"Metal devils?" Ram scowled at the empty stage between the pillars. "Was that real?"
It looked real enough. A shadow crept over us. The daily eclipse had begun. Frowning, Derek hunched against a gust of cold wind.
"It could have been some sort of news broadcast. We've met the robots and hoppers that still guard the trilithons. Perhaps they're still programmed to report incidents like Lupe's capture, even with nobody left to listen."
"Lupe," Ram shivered. "We got to find her."
"Fat chance!"
Derek made a dismal shrug at the bare stage where we had seen her.
"Not with seven worlds to search."
A huge black bite was already gone from the sun. We sat waiting there while it grew. The darkness was never quite complete. The sun dwindled to a ring of fire and grew again.
"It's annular," Derek said. "The sister planet is a bit smaller than this one, too small to cover the full disk."
The shadow left us chilled with a helpless concern for Lupe. We spent the afternoon roving the city in search of hope or direction or even food and water. Our canteens were dry again, our feasts on the sky car merely memories. We rode the moving ways, tramped sidewalks and alleys, found pavements flowing out of the city up the coast and down and toward the snow-capped mountains toward the west. None flowed toward us.
"Why?"
Ram frowned at a hieroglyphic road sign. "Why would they all be moving out of town?"
"There are scenarios."
Derek shrugged.
"You can imagine some kind of lethal agent at work and the whole population in panicked flight."
"Any chance we could get at the control system, wherever it is?" Absently, Ram squinted at the great half-moon rising in the east.
"Maybe to reverse the roads? Get the sky car down again? Head back toward the Sahara Terminal?"
"Not likely." Derek shook his head. "I imagine we'd have problems with the robots and the hoppers. Anyhow, we can't abandon Lupe." Ram made a hopeless grunt and we wandered on. I, too, was longing for home. And we'd planned to be back from Africa in time for the spring semester. I couldn't help thinking of my empty house, unpaid utility bills and taxes, my unmet classes and graduate seminars, of all the friends who must surely be concerned for us. Ram was more stoic.
"No use fretting," he muttered when I spoke of Earth. "It won't get us back."
We found ourselves in what had been a residential district. Modest homes stood on stationary side streets that lay off the moving way. We passed through parks and white-fenced paddocks where I saw horses grazing. Streets were clean, shrubs and lawns neatly kept, houses freshly painted, all of them empty.
"They were happy people on the evidence we can see," Derek stopped us to take photos. They seem to have lived well. Lupe would have loved to document their culture. We saw robots at work, mowing lawns, tending flower beds, sweeping streets. Three of them were busy around a big machine, digging a pit in the pavement, perhaps to repair a cable or drain. Another lay near them in the street. A pile of shining bits it rose as we came near and shaped itself into a metal travesty of Ram, lifting a silver spear when he lifted his. Its crystal eyes blazed red, and its voice rang like a signal bell. "Hello?" Derek shot a picture. "Can you help us?" It barked like an angry dog and waved the spear to warn us away from the workers. Riding the pavements farther down the coast, we saw what looked like prosperous farms, barns, and tall round silos, green fields and pastures with cattle grazing. I saw a robot on a tractor, another driving a sort of truck, but there was no sign of human life. Ram sank into a stolid silence, but Derek eagerly led us on. "A magnificent adventure!" Enthusiasm rang in his voice. "Magnificent! Nobody before us ever had a chance to learn so much!" He hoped for records we could read. He wanted to know the geography and history of the dead empire, the science and technology of its builders, why they fought and how they had died. He hoped to learn the story of Ram's little mama, and why she was marked with a crown of worlds, and how she had got to Earth. He wanted to know what the crown of worlds might mean for Ram. And Ram no longer seemed to care. Bleakly silent, he seemed almost angry when Derek spoke of the birthmark. Derek! Always had to see more. We followed him to the fast center strip of a road that ran west out of the city. It lifted us into the foothills. On a bend where we came to a railed lookout point, Ram led us off. We stood at the curb looking back toward the ocean. The city spread far along the coast, white beaches curving along the south horizon as far as we could see. Still water made a blue mirror in a wide harbor north. When Derek passed his little telescope, I made out ships at a line of docks. We found the seven trilithons where the sky car had left us, and the lone one where we had seen Lupe in her cell. "Let's get on," Derek nodded at the road. "I want to see what's over the hill." "I'm tired," Ram shook his head. "I'm sleepy. Those feasts in the sky were a long time ago. Let's go back and look for anything to eat. Maybe a place to sleep." Derek shrugged and we turned back, plodding along a narrow walk beside the moving way. Out of the hills, we followed Ram off the pavement to a farmhouse. It looked as if the robots had it waiting for the owners to return. Cherry trees in the front yard were bright with bloom. The path to the door looked freshly swept. The white paint was bright. Red roses spread their fragrance from beds beside it. He tried his fingers on the lock plate by the door. It didn't open. "Let's look for a garden." He led us hopefully around the house. "There might be ripe tomatoes. Maybe carrots and turnips or potatoes we can dig. Or chickens. If we find hens or eggs, we'll cook up a feast." Visions of that feast wet my mouth. But when we found a garden patch, it was choked with weeds. The hen house and the barn were empty. We tried the dwelling again, but all the doors and windows had been well secured. We left the place and trudged on to a moving road that carried us back toward the city center. We got off that in what must have been a shopping mall, a large square surrounded with scores of shops along a red-tiled gallery. The tempting scent of baking bread led us to a food shop, its window full of tempting pies and cakes. The door was locked. The sinking sun was lost behind a storm cloud that hid the mountains to the west. Thunder crashed and a cold wind rose. An icy drizzle turned to driving rain. Drenched and shivering, we left the mall for an empty street. Ram tried his key on the lock of a vacant dwelling. When that failed, he kicked at the bricks around a flower bed and found one loose. "If they were human," he muttered, "they must have eaten. They must have slept. They must have left us something." He smashed a window and we crawled through into a kitchen. "Interesting?"
Everything inside looked strange to me, but Derek explored it, finding what he said was a cook stove, freezer, and perhaps a meal dispenser. That last failed to function when he tried to work it, but the house was at least dry and warm. We stripped our wet clothing off and drank water at the sink. The pantry and the freezer were empty when Ram got them open, but we spent the night there enjoying the luxury of warm beds and individual rooms. I slept and dreamed that I was back at Eastern assigning a freshman English class to write a research paper on the history and technology of interstellar trilithons. Ignoring me, the students ordered pepperoni pizzas that they ate at their desks, never offering to share a crumb with me. Ram and Derek were up before me, exploring the house. There was no breakfast, but Ram plundered the apps donor's closet. His boots were badly worn. He found a pair that fit well enough and a pair of pants that was only slightly too large for me. Derek was fascinated with a little box he discovered on the table by his bed. It was about the size and shape of a paperback. An oval black plate on the side of it glowed red when he pressed it, and lines of green hieroglyphs shone and vanished. "I think it's a book," he said. "Maybe some sort of e-book. Could be connected to a whole library if we knew how to open it." He spent half an hour tapping trial codes into the plate and squinting at the flashing symbols. He had Ram try his emerald pendant. It may have been a book, but it never opened. We left it on the table. Ram took his brick when we left the house. The mall was empty and silent as ever, but a bell note rang from the food shop as we came near. Hieroglyphs danced over the door, and the air was suddenly rich with the aroma of roasting meat. A spit was turning in the window, brown juice dripping. Ram tried his pendant on the door. It didn't open. He knocked and yelled, and when nothing happened, he swung the brick at the window. It was something tough, but his third blow shattered it. He gave me the brick, scrambled inside, jumped back. A great robotic snake came after him, barking like a vicious dog, its glittering head changing into a metal mockery of his. Alarms squalled so loud they hurt my ears. All around the mall, crimson glyphs flashed. Doors burst open. Robots slithered out and swarmed after us, crystallized burning red in strange heads shaped after Derek's and mine. I thought we were done for. But Ram snatched the brick from me and turned back to throw it at the snake in the lead. The snake formed a many-fingered hand and extended a shining arm to field it. He waved his bamboo lance. The robot's arm became another waving lance. He waved his emerald pendant. The snake came on. "That way," he caught my arm. "Let's get to the pavement." I ran with him. Derek turned back to aim his camera. The snake stopped, and its lifted lance became a mock camera. He snapped a photo. A crystal disc flashed white and green and white again. Bell tones chimed. "Come on," Ram shouted, "while we can." "They haven't heard us." Derek stood still. "They weren't made to harm anybody. Could be they're trying to signal."
"Could be," Ram muttered, "but we don't know."
He tugged at my arm. We ran on. Derek followed us. The robots swarmed after him, but terror gave us speed. We got out of the mall and jumped on the moving pavement. Ram looked ahead, pointing.
"That trilithon, the one where we saw Lupe in jail, it could be another gate. We didn't try the key."
"We can try," Derek nodded. "It could be another world to see if it does let us through." We got to the rapid center strip. Behind us, the robotic serpent stopped at the curb. Derek took another shot and we rode toward the trilithon, immense and black against a crimson sunrise. Green symbols shone across the columns when we came over the curb. Ram gripped my arm to urge me faster. Derek stopped to look back, and I saw his jaw sag. A brazen bellow thundered out of the sky and echoed against the trilithon ahead.
"The Joker!" Derek's stubbled face turned grim. "They're playing the Joker!"
I saw a gigantic hopper gliding down toward us.
"Ibisi!" Ram gasped. "Quick! We've still got a chance!"
"The luck of the game," Derek's scowl turned to a hard, bleak grin. "We're looking for Lupe. Here's a chance to join her." He left us and walked back to meet the diving hopper.
Chapter 13. The hopper bellowed again. I glanced up and horror froze me. It came straight down at Derek, the sun mirrored on its huge silver head, its great legs extended to cushion its weight, its cruel black claws reaching to snatch him up. He stood still beneath it, his camera lifted for one final shot. "Run!" Ram yelled. "While we can!"
The beast was too strange, too vast, too close. Terror held me and dread for Derek, but we had to run. Gasping for breath, we stumbled past the bank of seats below the pillars. I glanced back. Derek stood looking up into the red glare of the monster's eyes. He glanced back at us and beckoned it toward him. "Fool," Ram whispered as he seized my arm. "I hope it takes him to Lupe." He snatched for his pendant and hauled me through the trilithon. The world tipped under me. My breath went out. My ears rang. The morning sun was gone. Off balance, I staggered into dead black midnight, stumbled, and kicked something that rattled in the dark. A cold wind struck me. It had a piercing, burnt sulfur edge and a faint taint of vegetable rot. It brought back recollections of the root cellar where my grandfather used to store fall crops of potatoes and squash and tomatoes on the vine till most of them decayed. And we stood there till our eyes adjusted and the stars came out. The Milky Way was still more or less the same, but I knew we had skipped again across the galaxy. I found no moon. A huge red star burned near the zenith, so bright that I saw bones on the ground around us, the skeletons of animals and men. I'd kicked a human skull. Shivering, we crept behind one of the great pillars to get out of the wind and huddled together for warmth until the red star had set and a white sun rose. It showed us a circle of standing stones out around the great black columns of the lone trilithon and the ashes of dead campfires scattered over the rocky scrap of level ground where it stood. We were on the rocky summit of a barren butte, maybe the core of another dead volcano. It was only a mile or so across. We walked out through the barrier stones out to the rim. A sharp and sudden drop. I crept as close as I dared. Far down below, I saw a carpet of green jungle. A wide, mud red river wound across it. I saw no mark of any human presence, and no way off the butte. Ram nodded at another yellowed skull grinning at us out of the bones beside a pile of ashes. "An unlucky native. Well, maybe crazy if he climbed up here to get through the gate." He squinted at me. "What do you think?"
I don't like it."
I shrank from the rim. "Let's get back to the robot world and try another trilithon, if we can." We went back inside the circle. Holding the emerald key ahead, he took my hand and walked back between the pillars. I felt no shift of gravity, heard nothing in my ears. Time-bleached bones still cluttered the bare rocks around us.
"A one-way gate," Ram shrugged. "I guess we're here to stay."
He gave me a dismal grin. "Maybe in my little mama's hell?" Our feasts in the sky car were worlds behind. I felt lightheaded with hunger. Our canteen still full, we wet our bitter mouths and walked back toward the rim. Ram had lost his bamboo spear. He kicked at a little pile of bones and shriveled leather that had been boots and clothing and picked up a rusty blade.
Still wicked enough.
He tried the edge with his thumb.
"Something we could need..." He glanced ahead and his voice changed. "Maybe right now."
A man was clambering over the rim. He got to his feet, looked down behind him, and came on by us at a limping run, carrying a sort of machete. He was naked to the waist and dark as Ram. One eye was swollen shut, half his face caked with clotted blood. With only a glance at us, he ran through the trilithons, came back through, stumbled around one column and then the other.
He's not the first."
Ram made a grim little nod at the pile of bones.
"They get here with no magic key."
The fugitive looked back at the rim and limped to crouch behind the trilithon. A pursuer scrambled into sight and stopped to stare at us. Just as black, he wore tall boots and a dingy red breech clout. He carried a crude leather backpack and a long blade hung from his belt. He shouted and came on toward us. As tall and muscular as Ram, he looked savage. Yellow tiger stripes were painted around his bare black torso, and his face was a fright mask done in white and scarlet. Ram gripped his rusty blade. I shrank behind him.
"What a welcome," he muttered. "One of little mama's demons?"
After a moment, the man looked back at the rim. Another warrior came scrambling over the rim, and then another till I saw six. Tiger-striped like the leader, they carried long spears. With only a glance, they marched past us through the trilithon.
I looked at Ram. What can we do? Wait for our break. He shrugged. It's all we can do.
The fugitive came limping back through the trilithon, the spearman behind him. He had lost his machete, and fresh blood shone red on his arm. The Fright Mask leader snapped a command. He squatted on the ground, head drooping in abject misery, blood still dripping from the wound. With one spearman left to guard him, the leader brought the others to surround us and inspected me as if I were somehow remarkable. He peered into my face, lifted and turned my hand to look at the skin. He was feeling the fabric of my jacket when one of his followers shouted and pointed at Ram. The Crown of Worlds seemed to startle them. They whispered to each other, shouted at the leader, dropped to their knees. The leader bowed to Ram and intoned something I thought was a prayer. Ram looked startled and said something to him. He answered. They talked, Ram's words halting and slow, often repeated. The leader studied the birthmark, gestured at the trilithon, grew animated, bowed again. One of his men picked up Ram's blade and handed it back. He bowed again, called his men off their knees, and took them back to huddle around the captive.
You know the language.
You'd never expect it. Ram shook his head at me. But I do. At least enough to get his name. He calls himself Tai Toran. He wanted to call me Tai Chenchi. The Tai must be an honorific. The Crown of Worlds seems to daze him. He seems willing to believe we got here through the trilithon. That seems to awe or maybe frighten him. I stared at Ram, hardly believing.
How could you know?
The language. It comes back. He turned to listen to the leader and his chattering men, and stood for a moment staring into the hazy gulf below the rim. He was the first one I learned. My mother died when I was born. My grandmother was busy with my father making the curry and filling the bowls when he sold it on the street. My little mama took care of me. My father tried to scold her for it, but she used to croon songs to me in her native tongue when she was rocking me to sleep. Songs about Anak, the noble black king, and Shekel, the white witch who murdered him. I'd almost forgotten, but it's all coming back.
One of the men prodded the captive back to his feet at the point of a spear. Toran spoke to Ram and led us off the mountain. I asked where we were going.
He tried to tell me, Ram shrugged, something about Blood River, something about slaves, nothing I understood.
We climbed down a hazardous stair the trilithon builders had carved into the cliffs. Toran led the way, with Ram and me ahead of his spearmen and the captive. The steps were no trouble for him or Ram, but I had to cling close to the wall, ashamed of my dread. Trying to keep my eyes and my mind off the sickening gulf below, I counted the steps. 1,000 steps. I couldn't help looking. My empty stomach roiled. 2,000 steps. I was trembling and wet with sweat. 2,188. Before we got down into the green gloom of the rainforest, safe at last on solid ground, I pitied the captive moaning and staggering behind me. The path into the forest had once been paved with cobblestones. Most of them had been washed away or buried under mud. Twice, Toran sent men ahead to hack a better way through dense undergrowth. We stopped once to rest. The men opened their packs and found bread they shared, brown pones that looked like the corn dodgers my grandmother used to bake. They were hard and dry, but mine turned sweet as I gnawed it, and we slept that night on a bed of fallen leaves beside the trail. Dusk was darkening the next day before we reached a little river and a long dugout canoe beached beside it. A man left to guard the boat had killed a